All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am giving you my rapid reaction to the Falcons' disappointing 38-25 loss to the Seattle Seahawks in week one.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, this football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch football this season. 2020 has been a tough year, but now that's all over because we're all excited that football is back, ladies and gentlemen. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. I've been covering the Falcons for many years. You can find me on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And today is the rapid reaction to week one 2020 loss to the Seattle Seahawks by a score of 38-25. Disappointing loss for the Falcons, disappointing debut for the Falcons, but we will get into the positives and negatives on both sides of the ball in terms of trying to take a more balanced and fair perspective of this football team. If you're relatively new to the podcast and, you know, haven't necessarily heard the rapid reactions in previous years on Locked On Falcons, then you are not aware that I try to take a fair and balanced approach to things. I try to not get too high off of the wins, not get too low off of the losses, and we will do our best to not get too low off of this loss. We will, before we get into the positives and negatives of the offense and defense, and sort of the key takeaways from the game, though, we will sort of jump into our Locked On Falcons lead story and talk about the Falcons' fourth down struggles and sort of how that kind of summarized their overall struggles in this particular game. So let's jump into that lead story. So the Falcons dropped their season opener in 2020 to the Seattle Seahawks by a score of 38-25. The Falcons were in the game until the third quarter, going down 14-12 at halftime. But then the Seahawks were able to exploit the Falcons' mistakes in the third quarter and never looked back. It looked like the Falcons were going to force a stop of the Seahawks to start the third quarter, but the Seahawks uncharacteristically went for it on fourth and five, and DK Metcalf burned Falcons cornerback Isaiah Oliver for a 38-yard touchdown to put Seattle up 21-12. Then the Falcons failed to make any hay on their next series and opted to go for it on fourth down for a second time of the day, this time with a fake punt. Personal protector Sherrod Neesman was able to take the direct snap, get across the sticks on a fourth and two, but was hit by Seahawks defensive back Marquise Blair, who forced the fumble. The Seahawks recovered, capitalized quickly with a five-play scoring drive capped off by a seven-yard touchdown from tight end Greg Olsen. That Neesman fumble on that fake punt embodied the Falcons on the day, as well as their many fourth down woes. The Falcons went for it on fourth down four times on Sunday and failed to convert any of them. The first one came on the Falcons' second possession on a fourth and three at the Seahawks' 40-yard line. Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan looked for an open Todd Gurley in the flat, but Seahawks edge rusher Benson Mayowa was able to bat down the pass. Seattle was then able to drive down the field quickly to score on a three-play drive thanks to a 28-yard run by Russell Wilson on a quarterback keeper, and then Wilson hit running back Chris Carson on a 19-yard screen pass, and Carson rumbled untouched for a score. The third fourth down attempt from the Falcons came on the ensuing drive after the Olsen score, following on the heels of Neeson's fake punt fumble. That time, the Falcons were able to drive the length of the field thanks to a big catch by Julio Jones on a 44-yard bomb off a double move to start things off. The Falcons offense, however, ground to a halt in the red zone with two runs to Todd Gurley that went nowhere. That put them in a position to go for it on fourth and two at the Seahawks 11-yard line with just a minute left in the third quarter. And the Falcons tried a play-action rollout, but Matt Ryan couldn't locate an open receiver and was sacked by Mayowa. Seattle turned that turnover on downs into 3 points to push their lead to 31-12 at that point. The Falcons' final fourth down attempt came midway through the fourth quarter. The Falcons had successfully moved the ball into Seahawks territory to their 35-yard line with 6 minutes left in the game, now down 31-18 after a Ridley touchdown on the previous possession. And Ryan tried to hook up with Ridley again on fourth and three, but his pass was just a bit out of reach, a bit off the mark as the ball scooted through Ridley's hands as he tried to make the diving catch attempt along the sideline. And then what proved to be typical of Sunday's game, Seattle was able to capitalize, move the ball down the field and score on a 7-play, 85-yard drive capped off by a 1-yard Carlos Hyde touchdown run. All told, those 4 turnovers on downs led to 24 of Seattle's 38 points, representing significant swings off the scoreboard. The Falcons are hoping that they can bounce back next week when they go on the road to face the Dallas Cowboys. So there's your Locked On Falcons story, guys, and we're going to get into the conversation looking at the positives and negatives of the Falcons offense before we turn our attention to the Falcons defense. But you know who's also looking to bounce back in addition to the Atlanta Falcons? America, of course. And America needs to jumpstart the economy just like the Falcons need to jumpstart their offense. And you can jumpstart the economy by continuing to support the restaurants in your community safely, because there are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash and need your patronage now more than ever. Support your favorite restaurants on DoorDash by using the app that brings you the food that you're craving right now, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose where you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with a new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code Locked On. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code Locked On. Don't forget, that's code Locked On for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. What is easy is to brush it off by saying, hey, I lost my mojo, or avoiding that quality time with your loved one because you've had a busy day at work and you're just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet with Roman, because you can get your free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment, and if medication is appropriate, Roman will ship to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. To get started, it's simple. Go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL and complete your online visit today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. You know, the summary of the game was basically the Falcons defense got off to a pretty rough start. You know, Seattle had pretty little issue moving the ball down the field to start things off, 2 touchdowns on their first 2 possessions. But then the Falcons were able to get some stops, allow the offense to get back into the game in the second quarter and make it a game by halftime. But then, of course, as is typical with the Falcons, everything fell apart for them in the third quarter. Again, this game felt like a typical loss for the Falcons. I think they were able to show some positive signs, particularly from the running game. The running game got off to a pretty good start with 6 of Todd Gurley's first 8 runs being successful, with that 6th one being that touchdown that he had to start off the second quarter. Unfortunately, after that point, the Falcons couldn't really do much on the ground. Only 1 of their next 7 design runs were successful, and Gurley was 1 of 6 after that touchdown. They also didn't look great in short yarded situations. Basically, when they were running the ball with 4 or less yards to go, they had the 3rd-and-1 conversion on a run by, or they had that failed 3rd-and-1 conversion on a run by Hill that led to that first fourth down attempt. Then they took 3 plays for them to punch it in from the 4-yard line with Gurley. So that's not ideal. That's certainly something that we have to keep an eye on. The idea that the Falcons can run the ball pretty effectively on 1st and 10, but when they need to get a yard, they kind of struggled in this game to get a yard. But beggars can't be choosers, and we'll take what we can get from this team, especially given how much they've struggled to run the ball the last 2 seasons. But again, this is something to keep an eye on. Gurley finished the game with 14 carries for 56 yards and a touchdown, which is a solid stat line, roughly about average what I sort of expected from him going into the season. So solid stat line for Gurley, solid start for him. You know, when we look at the quarterback play, look at Matt Ryan, I thought Matt Ryan was okay. Nothing really to write home about, nothing too worthy of criticism. You know, just kind of a B-minus game for Matt Ryan in my eyes. Outside that, there weren't that many takeaways from the offense. You know, Jones, Ridley, and Gage all had 9 catches. Ridley scored twice. But a lot of their production kind of was late fourth quarter stat padding. you know, I didn't really have a major issue with Dirk Cutter's play calling in this game. You know, it's certainly going to be nitpicked to death. I get that. I certainly can find some issues that I could nitpick. But, you know, I didn't really have a major issue with anything he really called. The fourth down decision making, I didn't have a problem with the Falcons' decisions to go for it on fourth downs. I like teams that are aggressive. So I just think the team just didn't execute in those situations. I think of those four play calls, probably the third one would be the one I would be most critical and most willing to nitpick the play call on, because they did a rollout, which typically cuts the field in half. And, you know, I haven't watched the tape or anything and didn't really get to see a good look on the replay that they show live during the game. But my best guess is that when we will go back and watch the tape, based off of, you know, the precedent typically that you see when you watch the tape of the Falcons on such similar plays, is that probably what happened was Matt Ryan keyed on one receiver. That receiver didn't get open, and the Falcons didn't necessarily have a great plan B. That's typically what happens when you see plays like that get executed as poorly as those things tend to happen. So, again, I haven't seen the play yet, but that's usually how it goes. And certainly I think you can nitpick Cutter on calling the rollout. I think you know, usually that's going to be a high, low read, and that's about it. The game was pretty much over at that point, so it's not necessarily something I'm going to spend a ton of energy complaining too much about, even if I do look back at the film and find out that I thought it was a questionable play call on that particular instance. Ryan was hit 8 times. They couldn't really block Jamal Adams. That's, you know, more than I really expected Ryan to get hit against the Seahawks pass rush. I thought it was a real question mark whether the Seahawks pass rush could be effective getting pressure on the quarterback. And they seem to have a relatively high degree of success. I know some of that came on like rollouts and stuff, and you had unblocked stuff like that, but they really had a struggle blocking Adams on several of his blitzes. He finished the game with a sack and 2 quarterback hits. The Falcons really have not been a great team when it comes to picking up the blitz, really, in the Dan Quinn era. They really struggle to handle stunts. I didn't notice stunts being too problematic for them today, but it didn't really matter because it didn't seem like the Seahawks really had that much trouble getting pressure when they were dialing up blitzes. You know, I think the positives from the offense, to sort of summarize, is I think the running game shows some promise. I think Gurley looked pretty solid. I think they were able to get Ridley a little bit more involved early in the game. We saw some play action, a relatively heavy dose of play action early in the game, and they were able to dial up a couple of explosive plays off of that. So those, to me, were the big positives. You know, we'll turn our attention to the defense coming up on today's podcast, but, you know, I don't think the Falcons offense looked anywhere close to the quote-unquote elite Falcons offense that I think a lot of us were hoping for, certainly not expecting. Because if you were expecting the Falcons to be elite this week, then I suspect you're probably not thinking clearly. And if you want to think better and more clearly, you probably should get a little bit more protein in your diet, because your brain is operating off of protein. And there's no better way to do that than to check out our friends at Built Bar. Built Bars are low in calories, low in sugar, high in protein, high in fiber, perfect for keto diets and anybody that's health conscious that doesn't want to have to sacrifice flavor, because all Built Bars have 100% real chocolate in them. They taste great. Built Bar has 6 new flavors. I've always been a big fan of the coconut almond, the peanut butter, but you can also add caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp to your rotation. And all you have to do so is head over to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your next order. And don't worry, if you've already used that promo code already this year, you can use it again. And so you don't have to miss out on the all new Built Bar. Again, use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your next order at BuiltBar.com. So again, as I mentioned earlier, defensively, the Falcons got off to a slow start. They did get 2 sacks on their opening drive from Tack and Grady. I thought both of those guys looked pretty sharp in the game. I thought Tack did a great job generating pressure. You know, we talked about Dante Fowler having the potential to have a big game this week going up against Brandon Shell. And I think we did a great job, you know, recognizing that Shell was potentially the weak link for the Seahawks offensive line, but it really was Tack that was benefiting quite a bit. And it seemed like Tack was getting more of those matchups, particularly early in the game on the left side of defensive line against that right offensive tackle. And I thought Fowler was pretty quiet in this game. He flashed on a couple of plays, but I thought for the most part didn't really make that much of an impact as a pass rusher, which was a little disappointing. But it felt like most of the pressure was coming from guys like Tack and Grady Jarrett. I saw some flashes from Fowler, some flashes from Tyler Davidson. I think he had one play where he was able to flush Russell Wilson. I thought Kaminsky had a couple of flashes where he was able to get some pressure and help collapse the pocket a little bit on a couple of times. They did manage to hit Russell Wilson 10 times, so that's a positive sign. You know, I kind of went into this game thinking if they can't hit Russell Wilson at least 8 to 12 times in this game, then, you know, just throw the whole baby out with the bathwater when it comes to this pass rush being good, because they're not going to get a more favorable matchup than probably the Seattle offensive line in week one for the first several games of the season. So if they couldn't maximize their pressure in this game, it was going to be a real problem. But, you know, they were able to get after Wilson quite a bit in this game, but probably not enough, particularly in the second half of the game, where it did seem like Wilson was having a lot more success breaking contain, escaping the pocket, extending plays, and being able to find open receivers like Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, among others. And again, I think that was a bigger issue in the second half than it was in the first half. I think coverage-wise, you know, the tail of the tape basically tells you, you know, Russell Wilson completed 89% of his passes in this game. So that kind of tells you all you need to know, that the coverage really wasn't there for the Falcons this game. The Falcons gave up a 3rd-and-23 when Ricardo Allen was flagged for a defensive pass interference that flipped the field 41 yards. There was a time in the start of the fourth quarter where the Falcons were, you know, had the Seahawks backed up on a 2nd-and-29 at midfield, but then Seattle was able to get 27 yards on their next two plays combined and get into field goal range and hit a field goal. So again, you know, we talk about the typical sort of Falcon game, you know, when it's 3rd-and-long, 2nd-and-long, it's like, well, typical Falcons defense is going to get gashed and give up something here. And it seemed like there was a couple of times where that happened. Seattle didn't run the ball as effectively as I think myself and others were expecting in this game. You look at Russell Wilson's efficiency, particularly on early downs. On first down, he was completed 12 of 14 passes. He had a 67% success rate when he threw the ball on first downs. So the Falcons weren't really that bad on third downs. You know, they only allowed 3 conversions on 9 Seahawk attempts all game long, but they just couldn't get stops on early downs, which meant it didn't really matter that they were actually able to get stops on third downs. Seattle had a 60% success rate on second downs as well. So, you know, clearly, you know, if we're going to blame anybody, not necessarily Raheem Morris, it's Jeff Ulbrich, because apparently he's the guy who's calling the defense on the early downs like he did last year in the second half. So, you know, everybody's favorite assistant coach, Jeff Ulbrich, once again, disappointing. that's going to be my brand moving forward. But no, I think, you know, the Falcons overall, sort of the last point I'll make, and again, we're not going to belabor the points here on today's podcast. I think the last point I'll make is the Falcons can kind of, you know, bounce back next year, nip all of this negativity in the bud if they come out strong next week. You know, because we already know going into the season, and this was something I think I talked about on like May back on this podcast, that after every loss, just like it was last year, after every loss, you're going to hear everybody talking about Dan Quinn's job security. Oh, it was a terrible mistake, terrible decision that Arthur Blank kept Dan Quinn. And whether you agree with that or not, that's going to be the narrative after every game. So, you know, my take is like, you know, I'm not going to try to overreact to the week one game. We've seen this team come out flat in week one and, you know, turn things around. We've seen this team come out flat in week one and not turn things around. So you got to take a wait and see mode. But, you know, despite all the hype this offseason, you know, this kind of looked like the same old Falcons that we have seen time and time again. And the positive, I guess you could say, is they looked sharper than they did a year ago when they took on Minnesota in week one and just really did not look like they even showed up to the stadium at all that game. So I think there are more positives to take away from this game, but not enough for me to feel great about this team at this current juncture in the season. And so, like, they really do need to come back strong next week. I went into the season thinking that they would probably split in their first two games against Seattle and Dallas. And so I was expecting them to beat Seattle and lose to Dallas. So now that they've lost to Seattle, now I'm expecting them to beat Dallas, even though I think that's a tougher matchup for the Falcons. At least I thought so, you know, in the offseason. We'll get to check out the Cowboys on Sunday night and see what they look like. And maybe we can change our opinion on that. But, you know, they kind of have to start the season 1-1 at the very least now, because an 0-2 start is going to be very, very problematic for them. And so it's tough to sit here and say a week two game is a must win, but it's kind of a must win. So, you know, as I said, it's trying not to overreact to every loss, try not to overreact to every win, because we saw that last year I know people think I'm being hyperbolic when I say this, but I remember distinctly after they started 1-7 last year, you know, after starting 1-7 after every loss, I was like, this is the final Dan Quinn game. He's got to get fired. And I'm not seeing as much of that after week one, but I will imagine that we will start hearing that pick up after every loss from here on out, unless they can rattle off several wins in a row starting here. But I just remember after the bye week, after the Falcons beat New Orleans, and especially after they beat Carolina in that second win after the bye week last year, you know, everybody, all they wanted to talk about was, oh, we're going to run the table, we're going to make the playoffs. And I even heard some people talking about, you know, if we run the table, make the playoffs, can we win the Super Bowl? And I was, you know, and I'm not saying that that was like everybody in the fan base, but that is sort of typical of what I'm talking about, where it does seem like people tend to overreact to every win. And I don't think that's going to change. So we will, you know, keep things rolling here on Locked On Falcons. We'll have a guest on tomorrow to talk more about this game and give us maybe some perspective on this game as they see it, in terms of, is this a positive, negative, whatever, for this Falcon team moving forward. But as I said before, they got to get it correct, because they, you know, last year they started out 1-7. The year before they started out 1-4. We can't go a week. We can't go a month or two like they've done the last 2 years before they get things back on track. It's got to be a week tops. So they got to get things back on track and come out and play some of the best football we've seen this team play against Dallas, or, you know, there's going to be some serious issues. You know, something is rotten in the state of Georgia, not necessarily Denmark here when we're using that statement. So we'll see. We'll be back tomorrow with a guest to talk more Falcons. Later on the week, Wednesday, we should be back with an all 22 review. If you have any questions, you can send them in, and they should be answered on Wednesday's episode. Of course, you can send those questions to Locked On Falcons on Twitter. Locked On Falcons is the name of the Facebook page as well. You can submit them there, or you can send them via email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com, of course. And if you don't have questions, but you just have any feedback that you want to provide to me on what I can do to make the podcast better, or something that you really enjoyed with the podcast, or suggestions on future guests or whoever, you know, I take all your feedback, positive, negative, neutral, or indifferent. And so you can send them to those places as well. And of course, guys, you know, check out Pepsi, check out Get Roman, and use that promo code LockedOnNFL. Hit up DoorDash, use the promo code LockedOn, and use the promo code LockedOn at BuiltBar.com, so you can get $10 off your next order as well. So that will do it, guys, for your rapid reaction. Some positives, not too many, not as many as we hoped, but, you know, hopefully they'll get back right, you know, next Sunday, and we'll come on next week's episode for a glowing meal. Like, hey, you know, this coaching staff has figured it out, but we'll see. Until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
If I, you know, what's crazy, guys, is like, you know, I was fine with this game. You know, the Falcons winning, losing doesn't really bother me all that much. You know, I've gotten used to it. So it's just like, you know, it's just part of the process. But like, you know, seeing the quote from Matt Ryan, you know, talking about how Seattle used Jamal Adams differently than they previously used other strong safeties, it was like, Like, what did you think they would do? You know, again, not blaming Matt Ryan. It's just like, that's just a testament to like, to Falcons. And, you know, people are like, oh, they're going to be coached much better this year. And I'm like, are they? I mean, because that statement right there was just like, oh, what? Like, oh my God, they traded 2 first-round picks for one of the best blitzing safeties in the NFL and one of arguably the best defensive back in the NFL. Like, you can make that argument. It's like him and Stephon Gilmore are the best defensive backs in the NFL. And like, they didn't use him the way that they used Bradley McDougal and Delano Hill. Like, oh my God, what a shocker. So I was just like, man, Falcons, ugh, this is, I was not down on this team, on this game, until I heard that quote from Matt Ryan. I was just like, geez, how do you let that one go?